Morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this June 16th, 2022. I am joined by my colleagues this morning, Judges Cochran and Brian. We are now ready for the second case on our calendar this morning, A211619, Bradley D. Fordyce versus State of Minnesota. And in this case, we will be hearing from appellant only because respondent did not file a brief. Appellant's attorney is present. You will have 15 minutes to make your argument this morning. We're recording the argument, and the audio version of it will be available on our website shortly. I know that Ms. Jelke-Erikson, you're familiar with the time limitation this morning. Can you see the clock on the screen? That will be counting you down. Okay. Whenever you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jenna Jelke-Erikson. I am an assistant state public defender, and I represent the petitioner appellant in this matter, Mr. Bradley Fordyce. Mr. Fordyce has presented two issues for this court's consideration. The first, that the state failed to prove the public place element of indecent exposure. And the second, that the district court erred by denying him a mistrial. This morning, I'd like to focus on the first issue. The first issue requires this court to conduct statutory interpretation with a heavy dose of common sense. All of the evidence in this record indicates that Mr. Fordyce was on his private property, immediately outside the back door of his home, within his backyard that was enclosed on three sides, when he was surreptitiously observed by Beatrice Taylor. We ask this court to reverse his conviction, and it is notable that in order to affirm, this court would have to hold that a private backyard is a public place. There is no authority for that proposition in the state of Minnesota.
So can I stop you there? Your argument is that the state failed to prove the public place element of the indecent exposure statute. I think that's what you said at the beginning of your argument, correct?
Yes.
But the statute provides 617.23 subdivision 1, and I'm quoting here, a person who commits any of the following acts in any public place or in any place where others are present is guilty of a misdemeanor. So it seems to me the place element in the statute isn't just whether the act occurred in a public place. Someone, and I'm just speaking generally now, a person could be convicted if the person committed an act in any place, either in a public place or in any place where others are present. Would you agree with that?
In general, that's true, Your Honor. In this case, in particular, there are two issues with the or any other person is present alternative.
One is that just one second. Just to be clear, though, you didn't raise an argument about the or any place where others are present either before the district court or in your brief to this court, correct?
We did not, nor did the post-conviction court make any finding that either the facts or law here were that any other person was present. So we have that procedural problem. Additionally, we have a factual problem.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in a motion for post-conviction relief, don't you have the burden to show that the evidence was insufficient to meet the place element? And the place element can either be a public place or any place where others are present. So how can you prevail without making an argument on both pieces?
I don't believe we need to argue that either alternative was not satisfied here. Certainly, you're reviewing what the post-conviction court did. The post-conviction court did not find or hold or rule that our argument failed because there was evidence of the any other person being present alternative. Also, there are no facts in the record to suggest that alternative was proven. The only person who was anywhere near this conduct was across an alleyway on her own property and in her own home. So whatever any other person being present means in the state of Minnesota, which it is not well defined, certainly can't be someone who is not in the same place. you would have to define what is place, right? It says any place where another is present. The place is Mr. Fordyce's yard. She's not in Mr. Fordyce's yard. In fact, she's within the four walls of her own home in an enclosed porch. So to conclude that even though there's no post-conviction finding, the evidence was sufficient to prove that any other person was present is frankly more outlandish than concluding that this was a public place. There's no law to support that and no facts in this record.
Well, the language, when you read the language as a whole, it seems to me the statute is designed to prevent and criminalize exposure that could be viewed by others. And the language is very old. I think it originates from 1931. And I know that other courts have interpreted similar language where others are present to mean in view. And so if we were to accept that interpretation, any place where others are present to be in view, wouldn't the evidence be sufficient here where the neighbor was in view? You know, it's the neighbor's directly across the alley from Mr. Fordyce and could clearly see him from her deck. So why wouldn't the evidence be sufficient under that interpretation of this language?
So no Minnesota court has so held. I don't have the benefit of an opponent here. So certainly my opponent is not arguing that this court should adopt that interpretation. We would strongly advise against adopting that interpretation. But the language does not say lewd conduct that was viewed by any other person or capable of being viewed by any other person is the crime of indecent exposure. The legislature could have written that statute. Our legislature knows how to write criminal statutes that involve sight, right? We have, if you reverse sort of the positions of defendant and victim, we have the Peeping Tom statute. Our legislature is entirely capable of writing that statute, and they chose not to. Instead, they chose to write a statute with a geographic limitation. They limited the place where the act can occur. So the target here is persons who cannot control themselves in public places or places where other people are present. The legislature focused on geography. They did not say if any other person can view the conduct. In fact, if you were to interpret the statute that way, it really makes the public place language superfluous and meaningless. Because we all know persons can be viewed even inside their own home. I live in a neighborhood in St. Paul where the houses are fairly close together. If my neighbor is in his or her window, I can see them. But I think we would also all agree that the interior of your home, of your residence, is not a public place. So to interpret the public place element to mean any place that is capable of being viewed by another, I would assert is not what the legislature intended and would render that geographic limitation language superfluous. There are numerous sources of authority in the state of Minnesota that support a finding, a holding, that Mr. Fordyce's private backyard was not a public place. Those include other statutes.
What about a situation, and I'm going to take you down a hypothetical road here. What about a situation where someone's in their private home, standing in front of the window, and the intent requirement is satisfied that, you know, the person is exposing themselves, knowing that other people are present outside of the window, for example. It seems to me that under your interpretation of the statute, that situation also would not be criminalized. Am I wrong about that?
No, I would say you're right, Your Honor. So there are two ways that the conduct can be criminal. Again, assuming, as you stated, that the intent requirement is satisfied. The first is if it's in a public place. Your own home is not a public place. And the second is if other people are present. So certainly you can be guilty of that conduct if other people are present in a non-public place.
So how is that situation any different than what occurred here, where, you know, an individual was just across the alley? And I don't see that you're challenging intent in this case.
No, I mean, after JAMA, right, the intent is a general intent requirement, which is only that it be volitional, that it be non-accidental. So no, we did not suggest that Mr. Fordyce was somehow accidentally present and accidentally in his state of undress. But to go back to your question, so I actually think cases like Prince are helpful here because they show sort of where that line is. So if you are in your own home, in the doorway of your own home, you see that there are other people walking past and you call out to them, you're attracting their attention. Perhaps you wave or gesture or in some way interact with them. You have now either made your non-public place a public place, right, under all of the definitions we have by extending, by inviting the public in, or it's a place where others are present. The reason this case is problematic is that we don't have any facts towards either of those interpretations. So this case looks more...
Counsel, though, don't we have facts that the neighbor regularly went out at this time of, in the morning, and it's the same time when he was out there?
Here's the problem with that fact, Your Honor. We have no idea when Mr. Fordyce goes outside. So it is true, the state elicited testimony that Ms. Taylor quite often was out in her yard. This was roughly 9 o'clock in the morning. But we have no idea whether Mr. Fordyce knew that, or whether he was aware of it, whether he was regularly outside at that time to be aware of that fact.
Doesn't that go to the volitional element, though? I mean, I understand that the JAMA case maybe foreclosed a specific intent argument, but if the question is accidental versus an intentional act, isn't the real problem here intent and not with the public place element?
I disagree, Your Honor. They are two distinct elements that have their own sort of tests and their own requirements. Perhaps if we were still pre-JAMA and the state had to prove the intent to be lewd, we may have litigated this case a different way. But the general intent requirement is what now makes this statute so concerning, particularly if the government can reach into your private property to criminalize behavior that you never intended to be lewd. So we can talk about everything from exercising in your yard to sunbathing partially nude to simply walking outside in your yard in your underwear. Because there is no longer any intent requirement, you don't have to intend to be lewd. It's
outside in your underwear, I don't think would meet the definition of the statute.
Well, arguably that's what Mr. Fordyce was doing. So we know.
Well, I think the jury rejected that, and you didn't argue that in this appeal.
Well, but all
you
the
only argued the public place element, right?
All the jury had to find is that it wasn't an accident. Is that it wasn't an accident that he was there, which we don't think it was. He didn't stumble outside of his door. He appeared to be smoking a cigarette in the photographs that were introduced. So he's purposefully outside of his own door at early in the morning, seemingly smoking a cigarette, and his neighbor observed him. But all of that conduct, if this court were to conclude that a private backyard is a public place or a place where another is present, then all of that conduct is arguably criminal.
I wonder so much if it's this court that would be concluding that, or whether it was the Stevenson court that already concluded that, because the Stevenson court is the one that looks to, I think it's Peary, to suggest that indecent exposure happens based on, quote, the likelihood that the conduct would be witnessed by others.
So there
already is that determination of what presence means. It's not that we would be creating it. We are looking to Stevenson and trying to apply Stevenson.
So I agree with Your Honor in part, and I disagree in part. So if you go back to Peary, because Peary is first and then Stevenson applies Peary. Peary is exceptionally clear that what that defendant is challenging is the intent element. It says that verbatim. Here, the defendant challenges his intent to be lewd. Then we have Stevenson, which next applies Peary. Remember, the defendant in Stevenson is in a public place. He's in the public parking lot of a public park. And certainly after service, we know that the interior of a vehicle on a public roadway is public. Stevenson does not define public place. Neither does Peary, neither does really JAMA, right? All of those cases are wrangling with how do we define the intent to be lewd? Because it's difficult.
Let's assume that this is about intent, and we're not there. what definition of public place or of public or of present did the jury apply?
Well, I don't know that we can know that, Your Honor. They weren't given any instruction that further defined those words other than just saying public place.
It seems like the challenge is really to the interpretation that the jury gave to the statute or to its instructions, not directly the statute, but indirectly through the instructions it was given.
I would say this is just what this court does in every single case where we raise sufficiency of the evidence and statutory interpretation. We can never be sure exactly what the jury thought. We can look to the instructions, but ultimately it is this court's domain to interpret.
Do you think that there's a better way then for statutory interpretation to be properly preserved through motion to dismiss, through a request that the judge give a specific instruction with a specific definition, and then we would have a district court decision on this that we could review? I understand it's de novo, but at the same time, I do struggle a little bit with the way that, and you're right that there may be examples from this court, but I struggle a little bit with calling statutory interpretation a matter of sufficiency of the evidence. To me, sufficiency is purely about the evidence and the facts, and statutory interpretation is purely a legal issue. There's a way to raise that wasn't done here.
So I have two responses, Your Honor. One of which is the Minnesota Supreme Court, one case where they've said this is Pockmuke, that the defendant doesn't have to do anything to preserve a sufficiency of the evidence statutory interpretation issue. And I think you're bound by that. Is there a better way? We can chat about that sometime when I'm not appearing in front of you. I don't know, but I do think you're sort of required to engage in statutory interpretation here. The other problem is the district court didn't make any finding that, the post-conviction court did not make any finding, for example, that a person was present. All I can tell you is the state, in closing argument, argued that this conduct occurred in public because it was in town, because it was in the town of Crosby, and that, I'm a little bit putting words in mouths here, but the best I can do is that someone was present because she saw it. Again, I think I've covered why that is problematic. That's not what the statute says. The legislature could have written that statute and didn't. I know that I'm past my time. I'm happy to answer other questions. Otherwise, I would rest on my brief.
Can I ask one further?
Go ahead, Judge Cochran.
One additional question. I think you, in terms of your public place argument, which we didn't really get to, but I think you're basically arguing that private property should not be considered a public place. Is that correct?
No, I would say it's slightly different than that, Your Honor, because it's not just about ownership. It's not just about who owns the land. We have sort of multiple reasons that this is not a public place.
A privately owned home, then let me rephrase that. You seem to focus on that it's private property and it's a home, and so how would you define public place for purposes of the statute if you were to?
Certainly. Luckily, this court has actually already done it. In Gratishar, which is a criminal case, this court defined the phrase public place and to be, quote, generally an indoor or outdoor area, whether privately or publicly owned, to which the public have access by right or by invitation, expressed or implied, whether by payment of money or not. Mr. Fordyce's backyard was not a public place because the public did not have access to it. This also, I think, is a helpful definition because it shows how a non-public space can be converted into a public space depending on the actions of the people involved. If there's a garage sale and you put up a sign and you invite people in and you display your merchandise in your yard, you have now invited the public into your previously non-public space. So I think if this court could certainly adopt the Gratishar definition in this case, and using that definition conclude that Mr. Fordyce's backyard was not a public place and therefore reverse his conviction.
But you would agree the statute is ambiguous in terms of the meaning of the phrase public place?
Yes. I mean, both this court and the Supreme Court have concluded the phrase is ambiguous, so I would agree with that. Yes, Your Honor.
And looking at service, the Supreme Court noted that One definition of public is accessible to all and shared by all members of the community. Another is exposed to general view, conspicuous and open. And given the purpose behind the indecent exposure statute, why doesn't that definition exposed to general view, conspicuous and open fit better than whether the than the definition that you just proposed?
Certainly. So what Service did, right, was look at the multiple dictionary definitions and conclude sort of as a threshold matter, you can't just pick and choose one of those. They could be equally applicable. And then you go to canons and other doctrines to interpret the statute. Among those, they really still weigh in Mr. Fordyce's favor. The danger here is different than the danger of intoxicated people with guns. As to the object to be attained, the Service Court says, we cannot just presume the legislature meant to eliminate this behavior everywhere because they put a geographic limitation in the statute, and that has to mean something. And in terms of the consequences of the interpretation, the consequences here are really more significant than Service. In Service, the court said, you can still have your firearm in public while intoxicated, just put it in your trunk. And Service was quite clear that they didn't believe that to be a very significant restriction. Here, we're talking about controlling what people can do on their own property that they don't intend to be lewd, on the sort of off chance that they will both be viewed and that that conduct will be interpreted by someone else as lewd. So it's really, it's more restrictive. It's more restrictive in a place where we feel the most protection, where the Fourth Amendment, for example, protects us.
The Fourth Amendment doesn't really apply here. I think that was clear in the Supreme Court Stevenson decision.
It's certainly helpful. We're not suggesting that there's some Fourth Amendment violation or that this court has to conduct a Fourth Amendment analysis. Nonetheless, we know that the area immediately outside of your door is in the curtilage of your home, is a place that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and is protected by the Fourth Amendment. So all of those join together, right? We have every definition a Minnesota court or statute has ever come up with would exclude Mr. Fordyce's backyard. We have the Service method of interpretation that would exclude Mr. Fordyce's backyard. And we have, as certainly non-dispositive, but helpful doctrines, the Fourth Amendment, which says this is a highly protected place. So again, to conclude, to affirm Mr. Fordyce's conviction, and I would ask you to do so in a published opinion, this court would be doing something new, would be saying something that's never been said in the state of Minnesota before, is that a private backyard that's enclosed on three sides is a public place.
So I know that we are well past your time. And maybe it's because there's no one else opposing you that I feel like we can go a little longer. But I'll leave that to the presiding judge. If you'd like to move us along and wrap us up, feel free, Judge Gaitas. But I did want to ask an additional question about... go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead and ask your additional question. I will just note that our third argument is scheduled for 10:30. So I don't want to go too much longer. But go ahead, Judge Ryan.
I think it's fine. I don't need to ask this next question. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Judge Cochran?
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your